It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now we meet the podcasters behind Uprooted, the new podcast from WPR Reports that gives voice to some of the lived experiences of the 15,000 Cubans who were sent to Fort McCoy in 1980 during the Castro regime. Join in with your stories, your questions on this mass emigration of the Mariel boat lift, 800-642-1234. WPR's Maureen McCollum is executive producer and co-host of Uprooted. Maureen, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate.
And we also have your other co-host, Omar Granados, here, producer and co-host of the podcast. He is a UW La Crosse Associate Professor in Global Cultures and Languages. Omar, welcome to you.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Omar, let's start with you first. Having grown up in Havana, Cuba, what does this storytelling project, this podcast, mean to you?
It's a story of, you know, thinking about home and where home is and what it means to, you know, migrate and what it means to belong into a place. For many immigrants and people that have had to, leave their land for any sort of circumstance, whether it's political or economic, we're hoping that this podcast, you know, tells a story that they can relate to. And we're also helping others, you know, people in Wisconsin to understand how to listen to these stories and how to start thinking about what we can learn from these migrant communities. When I was 5 years old, the Mariel boat lift happened in Cuba, and I never expected that, you know, 42 years later, I would be doing a podcast on a Mariel refugee community in a place like La Crosse, Wisconsin. So it's been a tremendous experience for me.
Maureen, help us understand a little bit more about the history and what you found fascinating as you dug into these untold stories from Cubans migrating and living in Wisconsin.
Right. Back when I was a college student in La Crosse, I went to UW La Crosse, I had heard that almost 15,000 Cuban refugees had been sent to Fort McCoy during the Mariel boat lift as they waited, you know, to either move in with family or to find sponsors in the U.S. And I've always been interested in stories about migration. I was a Spanish major. So I wanted to learn more. And what I found was that over the years, like, you didn't hear many stories about what it was like for the Cuban refugees who remained in specifically southern Wisconsin and the La Crosse area. And so I just wanted to know, what was it like being essentially sent to a state that none of them knew what Wisconsin was once they arrived in the United States? So why did they decide to stay here? What has life been like ever since? And what do they dream of for their futures? And that's what we really try to get to the heart of in this podcast.
And you really dig into archival material. You found this recording of an NPR story that aired on All Things Considered in September of 1980. And the story profiles the radio station and musicians at Fort McCoy.
It is mostly salsa music, but there are occasional songs from the Rolling Stones, the Bee Gees, John Coltrane, Louis Armstrong, or from the refugees' own musical group, formed at Fort McCoy and recorded in the studios of WRPC.
Maureen, what did you learn from these archives and these other news reports?
Well, big thanks to NPR's Research Archives and Data Strategy team for helping us find all this audio. All this archival audio really helps the story come to life. And I think from a listening standpoint, really helps transport us back to 1980 and just understand better what it was like to live through this moment. But just hearing these stories, it's interesting because the Mariel boat lift and the Cuban refugees coming to Wisconsin was covered really well back in 1980, in the sense that, like, there was a good amount of coverage. You know, the newspapers were covering it. National media was coming in. How it was covered is a different story, and it's something that we dive into the podcast, when it comes to how fairly people's stories are brought to the forefront. But, you know, in the 40 years since then, there really haven't been a ton of stories out there just regarding what life has been like. So it's been nice to just hear, you know, how the story was presented back then, how the framing was portrayed, and, you know, thinking about how that media coverage really impacted their lives throughout the decades.
Omar, along the music thread, you talked with Osvaldo Durruti of Madison, who passed the time at Fort McCoy by joining one of the bands there.
There was a group, musician. We all got together. We started, you know, playing music. And that was when I ended up going to different places. And that was my way out of the environment, the McCoy, you know. I just want to get away, you know. You're going to meet people, new faces, Americans, and, you know.
Music was the way out of that environment. What meaning did that have to these people at Fort McCoy in a totally different land and place?
One of the things that the podcast does is that it's really, you know, open a window into life inside the camp. And you know, in many ways, the relationships that refugees develop with each other, with camp personnel, army personnel. The story of the Mariel boat lift has been extremely well documented, except for the segment that we're dealing with here in our podcast, which is precisely what happened inside the four camps that were opened during that period in 1980. So there's a lot of waiting, and then there's a lot of people waiting. What we discovered is that, you know, in a way, these refugees are trying to continue a way of life that they were forced to leave behind. So of course, music plays a big part of it. We have stories about refugees joining in the kitchen team, you know, cooking Cuban recipes with army personnel, which of course didn't know anything about Cuban food at the time. The stories of neighbors who donated religious items to the refugees. We have artists that were there was a community of artists painting and producing sculptures and other artifacts inside the camp who are now part of a collection of art that a historian in La Crosse owns. So people got married there. There was a baby born at the base on 4th of July. So there's a whole world of relationships that continues a way of life within the base that we really dive into. And of course, this is all in the context of waiting for a sponsor to appear, because this is the only way to get out of the base is by being sponsored by an American citizen or an American, you know, nonprofit,
yes,
organization. So it takes a lot of waiting, and of course, when you're waiting, you need to entertain yourself.
Patience and hope, and keeping those spirits alive. Music, one of those avenues. Omar Granados, Maureen McCollum here, co-hosts of the podcast Uprooted from WPR, reports as we explore these untold stories of the massive movement of Cubans who fled to the U.S. in 1980, some of them landing at Fort McCoy. Join in on this history with your stories, your questions, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with the hosts behind the new WPR podcast, Uprooted. Maureen McCollum and Omar Granados, they weave together the stories of Cuban refugees in 1980 who fled Fidel Castro's communist regime, searched for a better life in the U.S., sought to be reunited with family, or were pushed out of prisons. They landed on boats in South Florida, and nearly 15,000 taken to Fort McCoy, the resettlement camp in Wisconsin. Join in on this history, what you remember, 1980-800-642-1234. Maureen and Omar, stay with us. Want to hear some more tape here. You talked with Cubans who crossed the Florida Straits on these small fishing boats. And here's the voice of Ernesto Rodriguez of La Crosse.
A lot of boats sink. People drown.
How did you feel?
Scared. See the big wave. The boat was top of the desert. When it was going down the desert, it was... People scared, people get sick, everybody.
Maureen, I can't help but think of the migrant crisis today and how deadly these sea journeys are, crossing like the Mediterranean to start new lives in Europe, or refugees fleeing war in Iraq or Syria. What parallels do you see based on what these 1980 Cuba refugees told you?
Well, I mean, when they've shared the stories about the journey across the Florida Straits, it's just, it's horrifying to me, because it just, it sounds so scary. And when you think about what people go through in order to, you know, try to find a better life, it's just, it's really, it can really get to you when you just hear firsthand accounts about what it was like to make that trip. And, you know, it's interesting, because once they got to Florida, they arrived, and there was a lot of mixed emotions there. Like Erne, who we just heard from, he tells a story about when he landed on shore, he kissed the ground, and then he was immediately given apples, and he had only had an apple one time in his life. So, you know, you're going through this moment where it's like complete trauma as you're crossing the sea, to complete jubilation, to, I think he says, like maybe 12 hours later, he was put on a plane, sent to Fort McCoy. And so then there's just this complete confusion. So when you just think about this very short amount of time and how much happened to him and some of the other people we talk with on this podcast, it's really incredible. And then, you know, 40 years later, all the impacts and the things that have happened in their lives ever since then, it doesn't necessarily get easy for them. So that's one thing that we really dig into within this podcast.
Omar, what came up for you as you heard the descriptions of these boat journeys across the Florida Straits?
I think what Maureen just described is a very accurate, way of thinking about the way the Mariupol lived, probably felt for many of the people that were joining in. And I think also the idea of how much happened in a short period of time. I mean, the Mariupol lived only took place over 3.5 months. Mm-hmm. But we have 125,000 people that really don't have much to the side in that time. So there's folks like Ernesto and Nino, who is another of the Cuban refugees we feature. You know, they were sitting in a prison cell when somebody came to get them. And, you know, these were young men at the time. And they said, do you want to stay in prison for another 40 years, or do you want to go to the United States? Mm. And they wouldn't even believe the person who came to see tell them this. Don't joke with me, is the response that we get from Nino in the podcast. So in a matter of 24 hours, they're in a boat, and in a matter of 48 hours, they're in a fort, a military base in Fort McCoy. I don't think when we talk about migration, there's some planning involved. There is some idea that you want to leave. There is some preparation that takes place. At some point you foresee a major crisis coming into your society, into your homeland, and you're thinking, well, maybe I should migrate, or I should try to escape. But this was a very sudden series of events that didn't, was caused by the breaking into the Peruvian embassy in Havana. It was inflamed by the discourse of the Cuban Revolution at the time. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you're find yourself in the middle of a place where you just didn't even know it existed. So you didn't really have a lot of time to think about that. And I think that's what going into this stories of military detention, that's the message that I've taken as a researcher, you know, how much was decided or not in a very short period of time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We had a listener call in who says that they used to work on freight trains that ran through Fort McCoy back in the 80s when Cuban residents were significantly high at Fort McCoy, and some would hop the train to go south or to go east without a sponsor. Maureen, did you come across any of those recollections or any stories like that?
Yeah, we talk with at least one person, Armando, on this podcast, who was 16 when he was sent to Fort McCoy. He was among a group of miners who was living there, and he talked about hopping the fence at one point. He got caught right away, and he said he never tried to hop the fence again. But, you know, we've come across newspaper articles, and Omar's talked with people who have hopped the fence and experienced some pretty intensive, you have some accounts of people being placed in solitary confinement for long periods of time and just getting in a lot of trouble for doing that.
We only have a few seconds left, but I was really surprised about their intake and the paperwork they encountered at Fort McCoy and volunteers who are doing this. Omar, can you give us a little sense of that?
There was a lot of mess. It was a very messy situation. You know, it was FEMA at the time and a number of other organizations, federal agencies involved in the intake process. But the one of the main problems was language, of course. There were all sorts of errors in translation and data collection and the obstacle that also the Cuban government had not shared any records with the United States about, you know, criminal records or medical records or so, a lot of the people that were working at the base in this processing and translation were high school and college students. And we feature stories and interviews with some of them in the podcast as well.
Well, thank you. And we're out of time, but thank you both for joining us. Maureen McCollum, executive producer and co-host of Uprooted. Omar Granados, producer and co-host as well. Wisconsin's-